In February, 12 members of our congregation traveled to Lumpkin, Georgia, to the Stewart Detention Center, a private prison for immigrants detained by ICE. We went as part of our congregation's commitment to Tikkun Olam, to supporting immigrants, refugees, and asylum seekers at a time when they are particularly vulnerable around the world. And we went as an act of chesed, which means merciful, loving kindness. We also went in a spirit of Talmud Torah, the idea that we should and could learn for ourselves in all places and from all people. And we went in pursuit of din, fair judgment, and justice. One day, when we were there, a 31-year-old man from Haiti sat across from one of our members, from Diane Rudo. Separated by glass, they picked up the phone in the visitation area. In the years since he had left his country, fearing political violence, his wife had died and he had been separated by his daughter for nearly a decade. He entered the U.S. without immigration papers. He was arrested and put into the immigration detention system where he asked for asylum because of those fears of political violence. He'd been at the Stewart Detention Center in Georgia for 8 months without a visitor. He literally has nothing, no money, no lawyer, no clothing but the prison jumpsuit that he wears. Diane introduced herself and explained our social justice work, our partnership with an organization called El Refugio. It's a place that matches visitors with detainees and provides a guest house in Lumpkin for families visiting their loved ones. He asked, "How'd you get here?" She said, "I flew." And then said, "And I asked to meet you because I speak French." He wanted to confirm, "You flew from Washington, D.C. just to see me." She told him, "We want you to know that you haven't been forgotten, that you are not alone." He tried to hold back tears but wept and blessed God for doing a miracle. He composed himself. He thanked her and asked if she could help him get some clothing if he ever gets out of jail. He would be completely forsaken, but for those people, like our 12 travelers and the staff of El Refugio and their other partners, people who live according to a Talmudic principle, one should not pray for a miracle to happen, and certainly never rely on a miracle as your strategy in the face of challenge. Not saying the detainee was wrong, far be it from me to critique his prayer. He blessed God with thanks afterwards. But I would also not describe our visit as a miracle. We went to Stewart because chesed is a core Jewish value. Chesed, loving kindness, has a sense of mercy that comes with it. It's so important that we sing about it in the climactic moments of all the High Holy Days. We're about to sing it in a few minutes. In the chorus of Avinu Malkeinu, we only ask two things to be done through us. Avinu Malkeinu, you know this one. Aseimanu tzedaka v'chesed. Aseimanu tzedaka v'chesed. God, do with us acts of tzedaka and merciful kindness. We don't say, at any point in those prayers, the prayer that you know from Hanukkah, and despite my introduction, Purim, She'asa nisim lavotenu bayamim ha'hem bazman hazeh. We never say that blessing on the High Holy Days. We never say or acknowledge or call to mind with thanks the miracles that were done for our ancestors. We don't ask at this crucial moment, this day of judgment, for God's attention to the miracles done in ancient days that we might be saved again. We do ask to be saved. The last part of that is, V'hoshienu, save us. So that's the same. And far be it from me to disparage Hanukkah or Purim, but Yom Kippur is about real talk. When we get down to brass tacks, we talk about acting with chesed and doing tzedakah. And we don't just cite a value that we want to be taught or a principle we want elevated in the hearts of all humanity. We could say in the prayer, Avinu Malkeinu, teach us to know chesed. We could say, Avinu Malkeinu, fill the hearts of all humanity with chesed. We don't say those. We ask that if God can't do anything else, then just let us be agents, doers of chesed, vehoshienu, and that will save us. So we went and each of us had an experience like Diane's, and you can too without even having to go to these remote destinations outside Atlanta and others. You can make yourself an agent of chesed right here in this area by helping immigrants, refugees, and asylum seekers. You can become a correspondent, a pen pal with a detainee. You can ask Evie Coburn or any of the others who heard me talk about this earlier in the year after my trip to February, who just started writing to detainees when I gave them the addresses. So if you get in touch with me, I'll be happy to send you the addresses. And they'll keep changing because these folks get deported and they move around. And I'll even give you a special set of cards, which our temple member, Lena Freeman, created from her artwork for us to use, so that you can be doing chesed in ways that feel to the recipient like a miracle. So we also went to Stuart in pursuit of justice. This past Shabbat, our Rabbi Emeritus, Rabbi Reiner, taught in his Shabbat Shuvah sermon about the quote on our Beit Am Ark. It says that the world stands on three things: truth, justice, and peace. In highly stylized Hebrew on that ark, it says the words Emet, Din, and Shalom. Din, the one that we translate as justice often, it's slightly different than tzedek. Din has a sense of judgment and consequences. A court, a legal court, for example, is called a Beit Din, not a Beit Tzedek. The concept is conveyed by Abraham Joshua Heschel in his work on the prophets. He explained that justice is not important in Judaism as an abstraction or a value, but for its practical effect on people. Prophetic Judaism is less concerned with the ideal of justice than the applications of injustice and oppression. So Heschel teaches, most prophetic activity was to interfere in situations which did not concern the prophet personally, but demanded action against the injustice. From its origins, our denomination, our movement, emphasized the prophetic message as a primary directive for Jewish life and action. That's why we went to Lumpkin, Georgia. Let me explain a bit about Stuart, though, so you can understand how it fits into a pursuit of din, of true judgment. Stuart is one of the largest and most remote immigrant detention centers in America. It has its own on-site immigration court that had the highest deportation rate in the country and one of the lowest rates of bond release approvals. This is partly because Stuart detainees are among the least likely in America to have a lawyer. It's too far, it's too expensive, there's barely any internet connection, they have incredibly limited access to their clients. And because the immigrant detention system is a single national network, detainees can be moved without notice and without any need for explanation or reason, literally across the country. So it's not so easy to mount even a basic defense and retain a lawyer. Now, partly it's also because of the inconsistencies and the subjectivity within the immigration court system, the incredibly high demand that the judges are facing. Or to use the Southern Poverty Law Center's words, Stuart's court is hostile. It's important to remember that the detention of immigrants in facilities like Stuart is considered to be a civil, not a criminal matter. So while immigrant detainees are entitled to important constitutional protections, they don't have a right that a lawyer is provided to them if they can't afford it, as guaranteed to criminals under Gideon V. Wainwright. Shout out to the NSL students in the room. There's further injustice. Immigrants in detention are mostly held in private prisons, owned and operated by for-profit companies like CoreCivic and Geo Group, which are the two biggest in the country, who at Steward at least receive $165 per inmate per day, with a government contractual guarantee that therefore means quotas to be filled for over 30,000 beds with detainees, and that was 6 months ago. So just to be clear, whatever efficiencies or cost savings one might argue come from privatization, the fact is this. These companies exist to make money. Judaism has no problem with that. It's not a sin. Wealth and profit are not inherently sinful. What's sinful is that these companies make more money by having more people in prison and by keeping them there longer. So people, human beings, not charged with crimes, are put into the equivalent of maximum security prisons and held there for months, not because they have been found through what most of us would recognize as proper legal channels to be a danger to society, but because the contract requires it. Because the power of profit, even though it's not a sin, is incredibly high. It's such a ridiculously blatant perversion of deen, of justice, that I suspect many of you probably don't even believe me. It's the kind of thing that when you hear about it, you tell yourself, no way, right? No, that cannot be happening in this country. But I swear to you on the sanctity of Yom Kippur, and I'll bring up the 12 people who are with me if you'd like, that we saw this with our own eyes. The scale of justice that we believe to be at the very core of our nation has been converted to a marketplace measurement. The Torah, in the Torah portion called Shoftim, warns about exactly this kind of sin. It speaks to the society about creating systems of justice, and specifically about the requirements to be met by judges. There's an explicit warning that the insertion of money and profit into the system perverts the eyes of those charged with carrying out the rules and maintaining the legal order. Aseh imanu vehoshienu. Do something with us, God, and save us. Elizabeth and I met a 35-year-old man from Bangladesh when we were there. His name was Shoaib. He had graduate degrees in economics and business and a political affiliation with the Bangladesh Nationalist Party, which made life unsafe for him at home. His older brother had been kidnapped and killed for that same political connection, so Shoaib fled. He, too, did not have the legal papers to enter, was arrested, requested asylum, and ended up in Stewart awaiting the decision. One way to keep costs down in a profit-driven system is to use prison labor. So Shoaib agreed to work in the kitchen at the detention center, a job for which he was supposed to be paid $4 a day. The wage is $4 for the entire day. He and other detainees told us, however, that they actually often go unpaid. Depending on the supervisor, he may work 5 days but get paid three. He might work seven and get paid for none. And then he told us this. Once he was forced to work an eight-hour shift without break, and he hadn't eaten. He was off his shift. It was dinner time. He took a plate and tried to get some food, and the nearby guard told him he had to go to the end of the line. He explained his situation. End of the line. He knew the food sometimes ran out, grew cold, not to mention the long wait after working all day. If that was the case, he told the guard, he was quitting the job. He'd rather just get his meals like everyone else and pass up the $4 a day. In response, the guard wrote him up for inciting trouble, and he was put in solitary confinement for 10 days. Now, there's a whole other sermon to be given about what happens to people in solitary confinement. We saw him with sweet but heavy, heavy eyes that showed a broken spirit. He had lost his first asylum hearing, and he was waiting for the appeal, but he told us he decided he just couldn't go on. He only thought about dying. He was, in fact, certain that he would be dead soon, and he only wanted to see his parents before he died. Shoaib was never charged with a crime. He had only been detained that entire time in a civil matter, put into solitary confinement for refusing to work a job in which he wasn't being paid, all over a civil matter. Shoaib's not alone. A few class action lawsuits have actually been certified in the past year against private prison companies, GEO specifically in these cases, for exactly what the court has at least certified to be the potential of wage theft. And in one of the cases, the company is accused of violating human traffic laws for its forced labor practices and for doing what they did to Shoaib, for using the solitary confinement as a way to force immigrants and detainees to work. Google it. GEO class action lawsuit, Aurora, Colorado. Now, forgive me. I know you didn't come here today for an extensive lecture on the evils of private prisons and immigrant detention. I shared this with you today on the holiest day of the year because this day is about Deen. It's about judgment and justice. In addition to Yom HaKippurim, one of the other early names for this day is Yom HaDin. And it's no coincidence that we read today from chapter 58 of the prophet Isaiah. He offers the quintessential statement on what it means to live a Jewish life. Now, our sages could have chosen anything. There's a lot of material in the prophets to choose from. They chose a statement that says this: it is not to fast and follow the letter of the law in regards to the holiday and the rules of ritual piety, but asking in God's name, is this not the fast I have chosen? To loosen the bands of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, and to let the oppressed go free from their prison, and that ye may break every yoke. We're going to read it soon. It's Isaiah 58, verse 6. I'm sharing this with you today because what's going on is not merely the practical implementation of a political philosophy. This isn't just the manifestation of what people mean when they say elections have consequences. They do. And that explains things like the tax law and trade policies. But what's happening in these immigrant private prisons is a perversion of chesed and din. It's an affront not only to America, but to the point of Yom Kippur and the basic values we claim today. Rabbi Joachim Prince was talking about civil rights and the plight of black Americans in the 1960s, but his words resonate today. He said, "Bigotry and hatred are not the most urgent problem. The most urgent, disgraceful, and shameful problem. The most tragic problem is silence. America must not remain silent." So we went, and we're speaking out, and we have created ways for anyone who likes to join us with similar visitations closer to home in Virginia and in Maryland to help detained immigrants around the country. Many of you joined the first visitation training program and signed up, and some of you have actually gone to some of the local prisons that are used here in our area for detaining immigrants. Many of you lawyers have stepped up as well, and at least two of our members who are in the room, I think, here with us today, have told me in the past few days that they will be going to the South Texas Family Detention Center in Dilley, Texas, the largest immigrant detention center actually in the entire country. They're going to work with the Immigrant Justice Campaign of the American Immigration Council, which is led by another one of our members, Royce Murray. I'd be happy to introduce you to her. She can explain to you and connect you with the ways that you can do this work as well. Other members of our congregation have volunteered through IUDA, right here in this area, in Wheaton and in Silver Spring, taking a few hours just to meet with people, to consult, and offer guidance on their next steps. You cannot pray for a miracle, and you can't just sing about the value of chesed. We have to do chesed, but I'm not really satisfied with that. Can we get two more people from our community? Can we get at least two more people and double the number who would take a week at Dilley representing clients in court or Stewart or wherever you need it? If we doubled that number, that would be a huge impact. Can we get a few more people to write letters to detainees? Can we insert ourselves just a little more against injustice, even where it doesn't directly touch our lives? That is, after all, what we keep saying to ourselves today. Avinu Malkenu, Ase Imanu Tzedaka, V'chesed V'hoshienu. Our Father, our King, our God, our leader, let us do acts of righteousness, generosity, and merciful kindness. And that, we pray, will save us. Gemar Tov.